we're hearing the Bach Choir of Bethlehem performing a work the ensemble commissioned to honor their longtime artistic director and conductor, Greg Fumfgeld, who is leading the group here. Esteemed American composer Stephen Paulus, who died in 2014, was invited to create this piece that is titled A Dream of Time, a setting of poignant words written in the 1930s by Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Carl Sandburg. Hope is a tattered flag. Paulus points to some of the vivid images that contribute to the hope of the title, including the line, Bach being broadcast from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, an allusion that is so fitting for the Bach Choir. Beyond that, the choir asked Paulus to consider music Bach created for the Dona Nobis Pacem from his masterwork, the Mass in B Minor, Grant Us Peace. Paulus explains, I thought it most appropriate to include a melodic quote from Bach's own Dona Nobis Pacem and to pair it with Sandburg's wonderful words, hope is an echo that ties itself yonder, yonder. My intent was to echo Bach musically so that the timelessness of his masterpiece visits us in this new music of 2009, and the piece becomes even more appropriate for the occasion for which it was written and the choir's devotion to Bach. And so, in his notes, Stephen Paulus expresses the desire in the 21st century to honor the tradition and help us hear it freshly. And we'll find that the 117th Bethlehem Bach Festival will honor the august and long-standing tradition, but in some aspects, making it new. It is May, and the season of the blooming of the shadblow mentioned in Sandburg's poem, a time when people near and far gather in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, to celebrate the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. There's much that is new this May, and we had a chance to speak by phone with artistic director and conductor Christopher Jackson about the tradition as it continues.
You're correct that both in today's world, but also in the past, people have looked to Bethlehem for this remarkable festival. And we do still draw people from other countries who come in, but also from all around the Lehigh Valley, all the way down to D.C. and upstate New York. We have visitors from all of these places. And yet, you know, it's probably worth it to go into the history of even why our festival transitioned to two consecutive weekends. So I can help people understand now why we've actually gone back to only one weekend, but 4 days, where it used to only be 2 days. The Bethlehem Bach Festival, this year will be its 117th version, iteration of the festival, really only taking time off when our conductor had gone to California briefly and for some interwar periods. But it was a pilgrimage, a destination for people, because these sorts of festivals dedicated to Bach or even a long classical music festival cycle were really quite uncommon if you look at the early part of the 20th century. And so it became this pilgrimage, this destination site for people across the United States where they would meet their family here. If you lived in different states, this would be the gathering point. Or if you had friends who had moved away, this would be the gathering point. We even were lucky enough, you know, without hyperbole, I tell people that we are considered both a regional and a national treasure. There were very important politicians who enjoyed the festival for many, many years, members of the Rockefeller family, members of the president's own family, a first lady, would come to the festival because of its special place in American history, but also in its sort of musical significance. And that is still true today. I was reminded recently that this will be the 75th festival that one of our dear patrons is attending. And there's a picture of him as a four-year-old sitting out on the lawn outside on the Lehigh campus with his family, picnicking in the middle of the B minor Mass, which is still a tradition today. We take a break from part one to part two of the B minor Mass. And if the weather is beautiful, which it is slated to be currently, fingers crossed, then people will sit outside and picnic in between the two movements of the Mass. And I think that that both shows, we're doing this remarkable piece of art, which I'll talk more about later in the Mass, but also it still has the spirit of a gathering place for community. And it's both the community and the music that feel so life-changing about this festival.
So that's the fundamental impulse for the festival and how it has attracted people for 75 years or more in a row. How about that? That's some story. But now there's a new sense of how the festival might unfold.
That's right. So we've been trying to think carefully about how to expand upon what we offer, while also keeping our really important traditions, like the Mass in B minor. And we're expanding outward to attempt to reach different audiences and also to let Bach's music be in conversation with our audiences and with other art forms. So we have expanded the festival. Now it begins on Thursday evening with a series that we're calling Outside of the Box. We definitely love our Bach puns here, but it is a concert that is intended to mix Bach's music potentially with surprising other forces. So this year, we have invited an ensemble named Fire and Grace, which is a violin and guitar duo, and their concert is putting Bach's music in conversation with music from the Iberian Peninsula. So you'll hear folk music from different regions across the Iberian Peninsula, including flamenco. And they have even brought in, they're collaborating with a flamenco dancer. And so you'll be hearing back-to-back Bach's music paired with music of the Iberian Peninsula, and specifically flamenco. And it's going to be a very exciting event. And that's how we want to open the festival now, with something perhaps a little unexpected, but also fun and inviting, and for audiences of all types who may or may not know whether a Bach festival is for them. And then we're extending the festival all the way to Sunday, and we've added a new program on Sunday called Cantata in Context. And this program, we are performing a cantata, and this year the cantata will be number 140, Wachet auf, which for people who love Bach, this is pretty high up there on their list of cantatas. It's very catchy and really a blast to perform. But we'll perform the cantata once, and then our distinguished lecturer, who is this year, it's Daniel Melamed, he's one of the world's preeminent Bach scholars, will be giving insights into the cantata, musical insights, historical, theological, that will change the way we perform it and the audience hears it. And then we'll perform the cantata a second time. So I've even asked at this point to be left relatively in the dark about what Daniel's comments are going to be, so that I will be listening with fresh ears, and it will impact the way I conduct and the way all the musicians that I'm working with will make the music slightly differently. The audience will hear it with fresh ears after his commentary. It's going to be a blast. We've also added a few things throughout the festival to give it more of a festival atmosphere and to open it up, again, to people with perhaps different interests. We have a library story time that we've added on Friday morning, and that's for young people. So again, we're really hoping to see folks from the Lehigh Valley also just drop by and participate in any parts of the festival they feel drawn to. So there's sort of a Bach and library story time on Friday morning. And then we've also unearthed these remarkable films in our archive that we're showing at a special event. Films, even from, one of them is from 1949, and it was made by the State Department here in the U.S., and it's called The Voice of America, or it might be The Voice of a Choir. I can't recall. I might be mixing that up right now. But it was designed as an anti-communist video to be sent to Europe, where it used the Bach Choir as a model for democracy. And it followed different members of the Bach Choir as they went to their various jobs, how they participated in their community. And it's a very fascinating sort of 20-minute long look into the Bach Choir, but definitely made in order to be sent to Europe as anti-communist sort of media piece.
Whenever we talk with you, Christopher, we always get a sense of the Bach Choir as a community of singers, a family even, those individuals who are singers join together with each other and form a community and create something beautiful.
That still is our identity today. I mean, we're so proud of the people who choose to be such dedicated musicians in the choir. For people who don't know much about us, the choir is completely volunteer. They are auditioned, and they work very hard. And they do it because they love this music. But they are independent community members outside of the Bach Choir, and they all lead these beautiful and fascinating lives. And we all come together and get to experience how making music together, making the music of Bach, transforms us as a community.
That's a new addition, the Bach Festival Film Festival.
Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah, the film archives. And I do want to give a special shout out to our archivist, Corey Dieterle, who has been with us for maybe a little over a year now, but it's largely been through his efforts, working hard with the State Department to get this video and to get it digitized so it can be shared out with the world. And he's just doing remarkable work as an archivist. So special shout out to Corey. So I told you about the new programming, Thursday night, Outside of the Box, Sunday afternoon, Cantata in Context. But, we still have the traditional festival programming that's there, which includes Bach at 4, Bach at 8, a Saturday morning concert called the Ifor Jones Memorial Chamber Music Concert, and then, of course, the Mass in B minor. And I can spend time briefly telling people about why you wouldn't want to miss any of these concerts. I organized the entire festival this year around the string playing in Bach's world. So, I'm focusing on virtuosic string pieces that Bach wrote. I'm focusing on the other violinists who were in Bach's world at that time. And really what helped me make the decision to focus the festival in this way is that we're bringing in two world-class string players as our guest soloists this year. Rachel Ellen Wong is our festival artist in residence. She just happens to be married to a gentleman named Andrew Gonzalez. In addition to being a fine violist, he also plays a peculiar little instrument that not many folks have heard of called the cello da spalla, or the violin cello da spalla. And so when I found out that they were spouses, I went ahead and took a risk and asked Rachel, I said, do you think Andrew would want to come and show this incredible instrument at our festival? And it worked out. So again, it's another string instrument that I'll tell you more about in a second. But Rachel has played on 6 continents. I assume the 7th is Antarctica, but I didn't ask which one she left out. But she is touring all over the world right now and has played with some of the most remarkable groups. Your listeners might recognize the Bach Collegium Japan, the English Consort, Academy of Ancient Music. And she is an incredible collaborator, plays both modern music like Caroline Shaw and Baroque instruments, and she just excels at all of it. So I tried to feature her as much as I could. And as I'm going through these different concerts, I'll try to highlight what music she is adding. So Bach at 4, it's in this gorgeous, resonant, small acoustic here in town called the Church of the Incarnation. And I try to program only solos, duets, trios, things that come to life in this acoustic there. We're performing 2 pieces that are quite quirky, one by a female composer named Maddalena Sirmen, who was a student of another composer named Tartini, who is one of the violin masters in Bach's world. So we're taking a look at how, the string playing kind of changed over time. Madalena Sermen, another student named Graun, and these are little esoteric pieces, but my favorite thing about the Bach at Four concert is that we're going to hear back-to-back solo violin works by Bach and solo violin works by a composer and violinist named Pissendel, who we know encountered Bach when Bach was relatively young, and Pissendel's playing and writing for the violin absolutely changed the way Bach wrote. Bach was an incredible violinist in his own right, probably better at the organ, but regardless, he was a remarkable violinist, and ran into Pissendel at some point in his 20s. And by hearing the two composers' works back to back, I'm really hoping that audiences can see and hear and feel the influence of this violin virtuoso in Pissendel on Bach's writing. And then that concert closes with a very famous cantata, Christlach in Todesbanden, written for Easter Day, again, when Bach was relatively young. So that's Bach at 4. Bach at 8 features the Bach double violin concerto, where we're doing something pretty quirky. Rachel and her spouse, Andrew, who plays the viola on this concert, are going to handle the two violin solo parts. So this is something that they worked up actually pre-COVID. And unfortunately for them, that project got shut down because of, you know, the need to stay indoors when all the concerts were canceled. But it's going to be so great to have husband and wife on stage together as the two soloists for the double violin concerto. And that concert closes with an extremely joyful piece by Handel called The Ode for the Birthday of Queen Anne. And I think my favorite way to describe it to people is just consecutive solo after solo after solo. Most of them are fun and jubilant, but all of them are really kind of fireworks for the soloists. And then the choir jumps in at the last bit of every solo to offer something jubilant as well. So that is not to be missed. And then Saturday morning, I won't give you the full rundown, but that concert features the very famous Brandenburg Concerto No. 3, which is essentially written for what I would say is 9 solo string instruments, 3 violins, 3 violas, and 3 celli. And they play back and forth in such a remarkable way. But it also features, again, Rachel Ellen Wong will be playing this incredible solo by Tartini called The Devil's Trill. And it has a wonderful sort of mythology around it, but that the composer Tartini dreamt, that he was in conversation with the devil, and they made a bet that Tartini could write something that the devil could not play. And he woke up from this dream, and apparently the music was stuck in his head, and so he sat down and composed it. And regardless of the story, whether it's true or not, it's an incredibly dramatic solo piece that's about 14 minutes in length. And Rachel is just a master of her instrument and really brings the story to life in the piece.
Just take a moment to say what we might experience differently if Rachel, your artist in residence, performs using a Baroque violin.
Yeah, I think what I would try to say is that listening to a Baroque instrument, playing Baroque music, is like having an intimate conversation. And playing Baroque music on a modern instrument would sort of be like trying to have an intimate conversation with somebody in another room. And the reason I put it that way is that a Baroque instrument is using, for example, gut strings instead of steel strings. You're going to get a warmer, softer sound. The string is also a bit more pliable and able to be nuanced in ways that steel strings are just not quite able to, so that the tone is different and the subtlety and nuance available is different. The same thing is true, the bow is different for Baroque instrumentalists, and that bow is not designed to make a consistent and firm tone the entire time. It has what modern players might call weaknesses towards the ends of the bow, towards the frog and the tip, where the tension isn't quite as high. But what that actually means is that Baroque composers wrote music with this in mind. So there are subtle differences in volume when a player is using more of their bow in Baroque music than there is in more modern music. So again, just the subtleties, the nuances, the tone colors are a little easier to achieve on a Baroque instrument. And one of the many reasons that when you hear Rachel play, it's so spellbinding. And that concert also has a concerto Rachel will be soloing by Joseph di Bologna, also known as the Chevalier de Saint-Georges, who is a virtuoso violinist, composer, duelist, nobleman, and basically any other thing you could think of. This man managed to accomplish it in his life. So we're going to feature a concerto by him as well. And then there's the B minor Mass.
It's truly significant, Christopher, that the Bach choir gave the first full performance of the Bach B minor Mass in America. So it's at the heart of the festival because of that distinction, but also because, of course, of the power of the music itself.
The Mass in B minor, somebody might ask the question, don't you get tired of performing this every year? Wouldn't you want to do something else? And the answer is no. And I think I've spoken with you before that, again, unhyperbolically, when you're working with this piece of music, it feels like you get to spend time, hours of time, walking circles around Michelangelo's David, or that you get to, you know, cross the boundary in the Louvre and look at the Mona Lisa up close. And I just can't imagine robbing myself or others of that opportunity to know this masterwork in as great of detail as possible. I was reminded by a choir member recently. I'll tell kind of a personal story without revealing her name, but she was diagnosed with cancer this year, and it was a frustrating diagnosis for her. She's beaten cancer once before. And we were rehearsing for the festival, rehearsing the B minor Mass. And she came up to me in tears and just said, I'm just so happy to be spending time with my old friend. And this is somebody who's sung the Mass at least 60 times. And that's how we feel about it. That's how people feel about it. It is such a complete and phenomenal work of spiritual significance that it becomes like a family member or like a person that you get to spend time with every year. And it is no less profound on the 60th hearing as it is on the first. So that's our beloved B minor Mass and the centerpiece of the festival.
Hearing what you just said there, Christopher, probably impacts you every bit as much as it impacts those of us listening to you. But just think of what you've said, that we have a chance to hear one of the pinnacles of the Western musical tradition, the B minor Mass at the heart of the festival. And yet we begin with flamenco and music of the Iberian Peninsula and story time at the library for the little ones and so much more. It's almost dizzying, really, and wondrous.
100%. And I think that's what I want to encourage people to do. You know, May in Bethlehem is gorgeous. Yeah, I'm sitting here in my office looking out the window at all the dogwoods in bloom, and it's been a phenomenal spring here. The festival is really, it's just right around the corner. It starts Thursday, May 8th. And so part of experiencing, of course, this inspiration of Bach, part of it's coming to Bethlehem and seeing how beautiful the spring is here. We were just designated a UNESCO World Heritage Site, the Moravian sites here. So you can spend time digging into history, enjoying the weather, coming to all these concerts. And we really want it to continue to be a pilgrimage for people where they can come and immerse themselves in something beautiful. And if times are feeling troubled, you know, if people are finding it difficult to deal with news or difficult things in their families, it's really good to get away and experience this level of beauty. And that's just what I really hope that we can add for our communities, both local and regional and beyond.
And the beyond part, Christopher, you have an option for people who can't actually physically get to Bethlehem.
That's right. We live stream the B minor Mass. And what I like about this and what is really different than just one angle with the live stream, we have cameras set up in quite a few different places to capture the expressions of the musicians who are actually making music. There's one camera that happens to find itself on my face occasionally, so you get to see all the weird things that I do in the middle of a performance, which sometimes is not the most flattering, but it's a different angle than being present live. And you get a different take on the music. So even if you can't make it here in person, please check out the B minor Mass, the live stream. That's on Saturday, May 10th. And of course, everything can be found at Bach.org.
Now, what are you doing between now and then? You know the Bach B minor Mass by heart, but do you go back and say, do I see here something new there? How do you prepare in that way?
You've really nailed it, actually. So I do always go back and study it. It is such a dense piece of art. Again, it's like looking at every stroke of a masterpiece of visual art, where I think to myself, I sort of replay what I've done the past few times I've conducted it, and I ask, did I get everything out of that moment that I hoped? And usually, as a performer of live music in a two-hour-long performance, the first half is 1 hour, and then there's a picnic, and then the second half is 1 hour. You know, there are things that I either want to do slightly differently from the last time, as in a completely different type of interpretation, or there are things that I know, I sort of say, you know, that we left our cards on the table. There was something left behind that we could have grabbed. And so I spend a little bit of time obsessing over those moments and thinking about how I can be a better conductor to make sure that what is supposed to happen in that moment, how the audience should be moved, is totally achieved and leaves no room for question. So, I spend time with these scores. It's kind of one of my favorite parts of the year. In order to accomplish the festival from a conductor's perspective, I have to kind of live, eat, breathe, sleep this music so that I can be fully present. I did want to say one other thing. So there is a concert called Chamber in the Saal here, and that's actually where Andrew Gonzalez will be featuring the Violoncello da Spalla in a really special concert. So the Violoncello da Spalla is, some people say it's a theoretical instrument, and the reason they say that is because it isn't really mentioned by that name until a little later and in some sort of theoretical texts. But what we think it might have meant in Bach's world, sometimes Bach calls for a violoncello piccolo, which means small cello. And this is actually what we assume he may have meant. This is an instrument that is larger than a viola, but smaller than a cello, that's meant to be held the same way you hold a violin or viola, up upon the arm, not like you do with a cello, which is in between your legs. And it also has a fifth string. So most cellos only have four strings, and this one has a fifth string that is higher than the other strings. And the fascinating part about this is some of Bach's cello suites, these very famous works that we've heard played by masters like Yo-Yo Ma and others, very likely could have been written for the violoncello, the spalla. And the reason we know that or think that is because some of the things that are most difficult to play, if you use a standard four-string cello, suddenly make way more sense when you add a fifth string. And so it's not entirely only a theoretical instrument, but we don't have it in Bach's handwriting that he wanted the violoncello di spalla. He would have said violoncello piccolo. And so what's being played at this Music in the Saal concert on Sunday morning are the last two Bach cello suites, but on this remarkable instrument and with Andrew being a phenomenal player. So it'll be something that I think people will really want to hear. And the Saal is a very intimate concert venue. It only holds around 80 people. So if folks are really interested in that, they should get on the website and see if you can get a ticket.
Dr. Christopher Jackson, who is artistic director and conductor of the Bach Choir of Bethlehem, speaking with us about the 117th Bethlehem Bach Festival, a reimagined celebration of music, tradition, and Bach that will run for 4 days from May 8th through the 11th, and it will take place on the campus of Lehigh University and also in the newly designated UNESCO World Heritage Site in historic Bethlehem. There will be featured artists, a festival artist in residence, Rachel Ellen Wong, and we also heard just then about Andrew Gonzalez, who is a violist, but who will play the violoncello da spalla and give us a sense about whether those cello suites really sound better on that instrument. There's the Ifor Jones Memorial Chamber Music Concert featuring Tartini's Devil's Trill Sonata with Rachel Ellen Wong, and the Bach Brandenburg Concerto No. 3, among other pieces. Bach at 4, Bach at 8, Music in the Saal, and of course, the Mass in B minor in Packer Memorial Church. And don't forget, the festival begins this year on Thursday with Outside the Box, B-A-C-H-S. And that's flamenco dancer Fanny Ara with guitarist William Coulter and violinist Edwin Huizenga of the ensemble Fire and Grace. There is the wonderful chance to hear Dr. Daniel R. Melamed, and he will talk about the cantata 140, Wacht auf, ruft uns die Stimme, Sleepers Wake, in the Cantata in Context program, with so much more. All the details available online at bach.org, B-A-C-H dot O-R-G, bach.org.